The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/Cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook network. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe. Smash that like. Come and join us in the chat because, goodness gracious, we don't do a lot of live reaction shows for nights that only include but a couple games. But dadgummit, we're going to do it here. When USC had that playoff spot right there in its hands, and then, my hands hurt. Oh no. Oh, I'm going to drop it. Oh, I'm going to fumble it. Utah did the daggum thing, 47-24. The Utah Utes are the Pac-12 champions. Congratulations to Kyle Whittingham. Congratulations to this team that not only decided to drag them with a two-point conversion to win the game at home, but went into Las Vegas, neutral site territory, and just absolutely stuffed out the Trojans in the second half. Now, there's a lot to get to, including Caleb Williams' health. How healthy was he during this second half? What does that mean for the Heisman Trophy? But most importantly, I think we got to give some flowers to a Utah team that on this podcast and elsewhere was not given as much respect as the Las Vegas point spread indicated. What did Utah do well? Let's start with the flower. We will get to the playoff implications. Hey, Ohio State fans, we see you. Thanks for tuning in. I can tell that Ohio State got good news based on the way that all these viewer numbers are ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. I acknowledge this is like good news for a business. So let's start with Utah. What did Utah do well in this game?
I thought they schemed up pressures really well.
Yes.
They use a lot of stuns and slants to confuse USC's offensive line. USC does not have great offensive line depth. Andrew Voorhees didn't play tonight. I mean, that was something we discussed, I believe, in the Wednesday or the Thursday pod. It looked like he was going to go, and then he ended up not going. And I think they took advantage of some of USC's offensive line issues. And they also, they weren't afraid to blitz. They trusted their coverage guys. You know, Utah's run defense this year has been worse than its pasty, and they largely trusted their guys to hold up in the back end, which, honestly, when Caleb Williams was healthy, it didn't hold up in the back end. I mean, he had five explosive plays in the first quarter alone before he pulled his hamstring or hurt his hip, whichever you want to go with there, on that 59-yard run. But almost all of Utah's explosive plays they allowed were in response to having to scramble out of or do some kind of heroics within the pocket against blitz. Utah brought a lot of pressure. They got home with some, but once Caleb got hurt, they could bring a lot more pressure, and he was a sitting duck. He was not able to get away from it. They had probably four or five sacks after that, but I thought they schemed up pressure really well in this game and made USC play left-handed at times.
Yeah, I did HQ earlier tonight, like a pregame for this, and I was asked what Utah would have to do to win this game. I came up with three very basic kind of cliche talking points you hear a billion times, but
Run the ball.
No. I said, don't turn the ball over, because if you don't turn the ball over, you're probably going to score against this defense. I said, tackle, because don't let the big plays. And then I said, keep Caleb Williams in the pocket, because Caleb Williams can kill you in the pocket. But if you let him escape the pocket and run around, he will kill you. It's not a matter of can, it's a will. Well, I mean, the hamstring kind of had that impact of keeping him in the pocket. But like Bud said, once that happened and like Utah smelled blood in the water, they did not hesitate at all. They went right at it and said, oh, okay, you're going to keep him in there. We'll just keep doing this and he can't move. We're going to hit him and we're going to take advantage of it. And then the thing that they did the best job of was run through a bunch of weak ass arm tackle attempts by the USC defenders, who just looked like a bunch of guys who were terrified of being hit and scared out of their minds to try to tackle somebody tonight.
Didn't it feel like Utah had more than 223 yards rushing?
Yeah, it feels like they had 600 yards.
Yeah. I wasn't watching the box score live. I was watching the game and taking my notes. And to me, I expected that to be like 270, 280 or you know, low 300s, not 230. But they did have some really impressive runs. We talked all year about how USC's defense is not a good defense, but it is a defense that has generated a lot of turnovers. We know that turnovers have a certain luck component. USC also sells out to maximize the controllable part of generating turnovers, and I feel like they've done a nice job of that all year. But it was very emblematic. The one turnover that they got from Utah was on a blown coverage on third down, where Utah gets the ball, they run for the first down, and then it gets poked out, right? It wasn't a pressure-created turnover or anything like that. I mean, the guy literally caught the ball on a busted coverage, runs for first, and then gets it swatted out. Their non-turnover related stops in this game were kind of few and far between. Utah kicks an ill-advised field goal down right close to the goal line early on, which honestly, in a game with a total in the 60s, is really foolish. Now, if you hurt their quarterback, it doesn't seem to matter what you do. But that, like, USC got very few stops that were not turnover related in this ballgame.
Right.
And there's the one on the 3rd-and-19 touchdown from Parks that went for 57 yards.
Oh,
the outright stupidity, because why do you try to force a turnover? Why are you trying to strip the ball? To get the ball back. It's 3rd-and-19. You know how you can get the ball back on 3rd-and-19 without stripping the ball? Tackle him. So why the hell are you trying to strip the ball out of his hands 10 yards shy of the fourth or the first down marker? Just tackle him. You'll get the ball back. It's just dumb.
I was going to say, how much of this like tackling issue do we attribute to the fact that, like, on the stat sheet, Cam Rising had a very, very good game, right? Was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Over 300 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Let's see. 22 of 34. A lot of that was yards after the catch, yes. Right?
Yep. Yeah. But he was legitimately better tonight. Like, I wrote down in my notes here, greater than Oregon game.
Because like, we downgraded him.
Yes. Basically, he was bad against Oregon.
After the season. Yeah.
He was legitimately a bad player against Oregon. He was one of the worst players on the field for Utah that night. He didn't run well. It was clear that the injury was still bothering him a little bit. He still doesn't look quite as quick as he once did. But at least tonight, the throws were mostly on target. Whereas against Oregon, that Cam Rising was not on target. He was not good at all. Tonight, he was plenty good enough to beat a very sketchy USC defense.
Yeah, I thought, like you said, there was the kind of explosiveness, which I wouldn't say Cam Rising has ever been an explosive runner, but just like the overall juice that he does have was not there, at least not the guy that they saw earlier in the year. But he was effective enough in spots, keeping the ball on some RPO kind of situations, that USC's defense had to at least respect the option that he would keep. Which I think made a big difference on a lot of those plays, because the way he looked like in Oregon and in other games, I feel like the defenses were kind of just selling out because they weren't really worried about Rising keeping the ball and doing any damage. He did enough tonight to where it was just, it kept him honest.
Okay. So let's go to the other side of this, right? USC. Woo! What went wrong with that offense?
Caleb Williams got hurt.
Yeah. I mean, like literally, At 8:52, this is before he gets hurt, I texted my buddies because they knew I had USC in this game. I said, I think some of what USC is doing is unsustainable, and yet they're up 14-3. You know, and then he goes on the 59-yard run, right? The broadcast, I tweet about this, I think at like 8:30 or somewhere around there. It takes them 90 minutes to acknowledge on the broadcast that Caleb Williams has a leg injury, by the way. When clearly, now they're only showing his upper after that. And he's looking over to the sideline, and I see his head doing like this, right? But I'm not seeing what the leg action is doing, and I'm trying to live bet this thing. And I'm like, is Caleb Williams hurt? Like, what are we doing? Because he's kind of, like, it looks like he's limping, right? And I don't know what's going on. And they're like, oh, his hand's bleeding. I'm like,
not why his head's bobbing.
Hold on. He could have been losing enough blood from his hand that there wasn't enough circulation in the leg. That could have been the problem.
Fair enough. Yes. I mean, like, there's no doubt. Or maybe he's trying to like dodge the blood drops from hitting his leg, you know, and it doesn't want that to happen. But I'm like, hey, Fox Broadcast, can you like maybe have someone in the building take a look and see if Caleb Williams is limping around? Because literally every decent play USC has had tonight has been off script. It's been Caleb Williams having to slide around in the pocket a ton, or just outright scramble and then literally scramble out of the pocket and go, or scramble out of the pocket and launch. And I'm like, how do we not talk about this for 90 minutes? That's crazy. I mean, it was, to me, it was obvious. Like he had one keeper after that and he had no juice on it. You know, Utah is probably at least has one pair of binoculars, which I think might be more than the Fox broadcast had tonight. I assume they were on scene. Like, I don't know what the spotter's doing, not taking a look at that. But once Utah saw that Caleb Williams could not run, or at least could not run to anywhere close to the normal standard that he runs, it was on, man. Because honestly, this is why I texted my group chat, like, this is unsustainable. Because the stuff they were doing was sort of off-script stuff. It wasn't really like the plays that USC was calling was working. I thought Utah had a good plan. It just was getting beat by Caleb off-script because he's that good of an athlete and that special of a player. But once he was hurt, they were in trouble.
So we know Ohio State's getting their spot, right?
Wait, let's save that for the other side.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
No, listen, USC deserves a, like, open it up. Like this is the frog in biology. Like, okay, we got to say no, because you couldn't run the ball.
No.
You couldn't do anything outside of Caleb Williams' hero ball.
No.
You had your season on the line for this entire second half. All you needed was like one scoring drive. You couldn't go get it. And yes, like, Caleb was hurt, but you couldn't get it. It was
they did go get it, though, didn't they?
They got it a couple times.
I mean, yeah, they went and got it, and like they ran for what, 6.3 a carry, 125 yards. They had 70 yards in sacks.
No, I'm talking about USC.
Yeah, sack adjusted. Sack adjusted. Bud's right. Sack adjusted, they averaged 6.3 yards per rush.
Yeah, they just had 70 yards and sacks lost. I mean, like, I don't really put this on the offense. Caleb had 363 through the air and three tutties. If he's healthy, they probably score 40 on this Utah defense. Like, Utah really wasn't getting to him.
But I will say, though, like we talked, Voorhees
running
was
the
out.
Ball not without without Caleb.
Mm-hmm. No, they weren't able to run the ball without
Caleb. No, that's fair.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you had no balance. It was Caleb or bust. Mm-hmm. You had zero touchdowns for a long stretch of this game.
Yes. You had one touchdown in the second half.
I thought they were going to pull him.
Should they have pulled him?
No, because look, I watched the end of that Colorado game with the backup whose name I probably should have written down. And
Miller Balls.
Yes. All he could do was throw swing screens. Like, that's really the only play they let him run in that Colorado game. That's like the only action I've seen him get this year. Probably because USC plays a lot of close games late because they don't get a lot of stops. Caleb on one leg is still better than Miller Moss on two.
Miller Moss is like the name of a derivative schoolyard rapper. But no, I just, it's, we mentioned Voorhees was out. and they lose the center in the fourth quarter. But like, we talked all season about how Utah this year wasn't, well, when we talked about Utah, not all season, but we talked about how they weren't the same kind of team in the trenches that we saw last year. They looked that way tonight against USC. Like Tui Tuiapolotu, I think I heard his name once. I thought he got taken out of the game. I thought the offensive line, which as I just said, they had injuries. They were short a few guys. I felt they were struggling to get any kind of push up front. And I think that, I mean, we saw it with not just in the tackling, but just in the lines. Like Utah looked like Utah tonight. It was the tougher team than USC. USC looked soft. Like that has always been the silly kind of narrative about that team. Like, oh, the Pac-12 is soft, blah, blah, blah. Utah's not soft. They're in the Pac-12. They've won it two straight years in a row. USC looked soft tonight. And I just wonder, like, spinning this forward, that team's going to be in the Big Ten in a couple of years. There's a lot of Utahs in the Big Ten. Like, they need to figure that out if they're going to adjust to their new life in their new, you know, conference. I mean, obviously, if they still have Caleb Williams and he's healthy, they're probably going to win plenty of games. But when it gets to winning the Big Ten and getting playoff berths, that's something they need to figure out.
I mean, and the thing is, guys, Utah is not that physical on the lines of scrimmage this year. They've been pushed around, right? Oregon pushed them around. Florida pushed them around. There's probably a couple other games. Honestly, Oregon State's offensive line moved Utah just fine. That was back when they had real quarterback problems and they threw four picks in the first 40 minutes of the ball game. So it was never really close enough to where the Beavers pushing around Utah mattered. I mean, this is not your standard Utah team typically, which I think does speak to, wow, like if that's not your standard Utah team along lines of scrimmage and USC look that soft. Yeah, I agree. I thought Tui did have one really nice play. There was like a third down and three. Utah runs it.
And he blew it up.
Yes. Yeah, he smoked it. But it was a nice play by him. I think the center guard also kind of olayed it.
You had a Utah team that was challenged. Yeah. Like, you know, we were talking about all these different spots during the season where they did not look like they were up to the standard we put on record. And we were not the only ones saying that this Utah team did not necessarily look like they were up to the standard. Kyle Whittingham told us on the record that they loved that. You know, they loved being able to have that chip on their shoulder. And they end up going ahead and proving. Congratulations to the Utah Utes. You are the Pac-12 champions. You will be in the Rose Bowl. As for USC, ooh, boy.
I was going to make a joke about how Utah won't be playing in the Rose Bowl, but for a different reason than we thought 2 days ago.
Won't be?
Well, because Ohio State doesn't want to play in the Rose Bowl this year, and now they don't have to.
Because they're in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Coming up on the other side, the college football playoff impacts of Utah taking down USC, what that means for the Buckeyes, and more next.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Revisionist History 101 with the Cover 3 podcast. As MH says, USC should have hired Whittingham and not Riley. Kyle Whittingham was mentioned. I have zero idea if he was actually a candidate for this job. Why? Because the USC job was open in September. We mentioned everyone for the USC job. Kyle Whittingham, of course he was mentioned, because we had 3 months to mention a name before Lincoln Riley was eventually named the head coach. But
I mean, Kyle Whittingham would not have this USC team in the Pac-12 title game this year.
No. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. Like, transfer portal. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a great way to squash that. Thank you, bud. I mean, you're bringing your weight here. That's a good way to be able to affirmatively be like, no, that would not be the case right now. So
like, he's an awesome coach. Like, we could have the conversation. Would he have him in a better spot than Lincoln Riley?
3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. But for this year, I mean, this is probably the last time we'll talk USC for maybe a week or two. It is hard to imagine much of a better season for USC than their fans could really hope for, right? I mean, what are they, 11-2?
Yep.
That's pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Like, compared to, like, they, over their win total, they were sitting here on the first Friday in December with a chance to be in the college football playoff. That's all you want. Utah will not be in the college football playoff.
Nope.
Ohio State
is. Yes. They're in.
Yeah, they're in.
I mean, unless the committee does something we have never seen them do and allows USC to stay in, even though it just lost, which I don't think they're going to do, because they've always said that, you know, conference titles or whatever are a tiebreaker in similar situations, but USC no longer has a conference title. Ohio State doesn't have a conference title, and they have half as many losses. And they've got a pretty good win over Penn State as far as the rankings are concerned. So Ohio State is in. And now there is – it's not going to happen, but there is an actual scenario in which we have a four-team college football playoff without a single conference champion in it. If Georgia, Michigan, and TCU all lose tomorrow, it'll be either Ohio State, TCU, Alabama, Michigan, and Georgia comprising the field, and none of them will have won their conference.
Man,
what a system.
That's awesome. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would like for the conference championships to mean something, and you know, this weekend they really don't. There's a reason why we're doing a reaction show on a Friday night.
I mean,
join us tomorrow at 2:30 as we preview the SEC title game between Georgia and LSU. Obviously, I'll be on there, and I'm excited to do it. But I think you need to have some stakes in these games.
If you just made the conference championship a requirement, the conference championship games would just become playoff games and you would have an expanded college football playoff. But can't do that. That'd been way too easy.
Exactly.
So what chance do you give Ohio State to get in here and like wreck shop?
Well,
if it depends on the matchup, like if actually, no, it doesn't, because like if they're going to end up having to play, assuming Michigan and Georgia win, Ohio State's either playing Michigan again, which is beating it up 2 years in a row, or it's going to play Georgia, which beat up the same Michigan that beat it up last year and will probably beat the hell out of it this year.
They will be favored over Michigan if they match up.
Oh, I'm sure they will, and they'll lose again.
They could.
Yeah. Let's go.
Or it could go the way that Georgia Alabama went round two last year, right?
It's Michigan. Well, that's true. Blake Corum will be injured. Oh, wait. He was hurt in the first game.
Blake Corum as Williams. That's interesting. Huh. Look, they will not be a touchdown dog to Georgia. I can tell you that. It'll be less.
Mm-hmm. Ohio State will be a live team in the college football playoff. It's got a very good quarterback. It's got great wide receivers. It has very talented players. It is a live quote unquote dog in the playoff. It could beat Michigan. It could beat Georgia. It could beat TCU. Will it? I don't know, because they just seem to punch them in the face. They don't seem to react very well.
Well, I'm just saying, 8 years ago, they did not win. You know,
in 2014,
they won their conference.
Mm-hmm. But that
team had a loss.
That team wasn't as talented. It was still pretty talented, but I thought that team had a little more guts to them than this team has.
I've looked into that team before. The receivers on that team were nuts. It was like Michael Thomas and a bunch of guys who would go on to play for a decent while in the NFL, right? But they also, like that Ohio State team, they got one of the worst Bama team. Who was the quarterback for Bama? It was like the worst quarterback Bama's run out there that has, you know, made the playoff or the BCS.
Was that
the guy who was like moving from receiver to quarterback and back?
Sims?
Yes. Yeah. Right. I mean, like Sims, not a capable thrower at a championship level, honestly. And so they took advantage of that. Bama had a couple issues that year. They beat them. You know, Dalvin Cook fumbles four times in the Rose Bowl as he's averaging like 12 yards carry against Oregon. And then they bully Oregon at the line of scrimmage, you know, and beat Mariota.
And I mean, they had their third string quarterback in. So right. It's like, Braxton Miller.
That's what I mean. Is
JT. Yeah. It's like they weren't as talented at the quarterback position as they are right now, but they had good players and I felt like the defense was a little saltier too.
I think so. Look, so if Ohio State, well, we need to stop using if. When Ohio State gets in, I am curious to see if Ohio State is able to lean on its front seven more and have a little more variety in terms of the coverage, not coverage it plays, but just the depth of their safeties, right? Maybe don't have everybody quite so close. I know it's a Jim Knowles defense.
Do you dare him again? Do you dare him?
I'm going to dare him on some plays for sure. I just don't know if I'm going to dare them quite as frequently. You know, I think back to that Penn State game where you know, JT Tuimalau had a really nice ball game. They have some good players on that Ohio State front. But Tom, it's a great question though. Like, would you dare him? Because Michigan, again, 360 yards on five plays, 3.0 on their other 54 plays.
Like, I think
54 out of 60 plays, they had a pretty nice day.
Mm-hmm.
Filling out your All-American ballot, Bud, do you do this?
I do not vote.
Okay. I didn't have a lot of Ohio State defensive players.
Neither did I.
Did you have a lot of Michigan defensive players?
Nope.
I had two, and we go deep. Like the ballot is like down to like LB6 and like DL8 or whatever. I think I had one or two.
Would you have Mike Morris?
Yeah.
Mike Morris didn't make mine. I don't know if I had any Michigan players. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. This is great podcasting right now. I don't think I did. I feel like that's more of a – I know I had a few offensive players on there. I know Olu was on there. I know Corum was on there.
Do you have any Georgia ones?
For defense?
Yeah.
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 100%.
Yeah.
No, I didn't do that pro football focus move of like – Only my formula produces these numbers.
My highest grade.
Yeah, my highest graded for the season.
Highest grade for the season.
Sorry. Jalen Carter, you did. You did. Congratulations. Yeah, that
the Dumas Johnson kid for Georgia, by the way, has been pretty damn good too. The sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
Their linebacker, like that guy. I've been watching some of these playoff teams. He's all over the field.
So now that we have come to the place where Ohio State is in, right?
Yeah.
Now let's talk about it.
What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about it. But guys, we got to talk about it. If the Kansas State Wildcats, which are narrow underdogs against TCU, if Kansas State defeats the Horned Frogs, are we really talking about it? Are we really talking about? Because currently in the College Football Playoff Selection Committee rankings, Ohio State is number 5. Sure, you're in. I get it. You got one loss. That one loss is to Michigan. Michigan is a team that is currently ranked number 2 in the College Football Playoff rankings. The team that is currently ranked number 6 in the College Football Playoff rankings has 2 losses, which means that their arrival in the top 4 on Sunday would be historic. What would not be historic is the inclusion of that program in the College Football Playoff because they have been in it so many daggum times. If TCU, who is again just a narrow favorite to a team that it was trailing early the first time they played, are we really talking about it? If TCU loses to Kansas State, is Alabama in?
Can I pose you a question?
Yeah, I mean this is the time for posing questions.
All right. Well, let's take a look at Alabama. 10-2. Its best win is number 20 Texas. Needed a last second field goal to beat them, even though their starting quarterback got knocked out of the game in the first half. It's got a win over Mississippi State, which magically appeared in the rankings this week. And it had a narrow escape against Texas A&M, and both of its losses were close, blah, blah, blah. If the losses are close being matters, then the wins being close matters too. So that team's 10-2. A team lost tonight for the second time this season, but it only lost to the same team. A team that is ranked in the number 11 and will be ranked higher come Sunday. And that team has one more win than Alabama. And that team has a win over number 17 and a win over number 21. If you're going to let a two-loss team in, is the one that lost tonight not the one with the better overall resume?
It's a fair point. It kind of makes you wonder, like, does the committee really believe its own rankings as far as its resume? Are they really going to look at it like that, or are they going to sort of eye test it? I don't think there's any way USC gets in over Alabama, personally.
Neither do I. But my point is, logically, how do you justify putting in Alabama over USC?
I mean, you want these teams to play conference championship games, right? And mm-hmm. you are sort of penalizing USC here for mm-hmm. playing in a conference championship game. I agree. I mean, Dan Wetzel made this point for Yahoo in a column, a similar point to what Tom's making. And I think this year in particular is a unique year in which it really does apply. Honestly, just logically, the 4 teams that made it in this weekend should be in. They should be
in. I also love Dan, but he also included that detail that he said USC won its division and there's no division plays.
Oh, true. Yeah.
I listen, I make so many mistakes. I make a ton of mistakes, but I just, you know, I saw that one and I was like, oh, yikes. I love you, Dan. Come on.
But I'm just saying, right. if Alabama gets in, I know I've said it before, I'm out on the playoff, period. I'll talk about it because I have to for work, but I'm never going to care about anything that they do.
Bama can get in, I think, if TCU gets blown out or if Duggan gets hurt enough to where the committee really thinks he's going to miss the playoff or both.
having two teams who did not play for a conference championship.
One that lost twice. One that didn't even win its own. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first ever two-loss team. Mm-hmm.
The first two-loss team to make it will be a team that didn't win its own division if that happens.
Yeah. I always envisioned a two-loss team making it being a team that had a guy hurt during the season, suffered some weird losses, got healthy, got right at the right time, won its conference, was clearly like, hey, like this is the best team or one of the four best teams in the sport now that it's healthy again, right? Maybe like a USC in 2007 when John David Booty was hurt, they lost twice, right? And then 2000 USC at full strength is just as good as USC or LSU was that year, just as good as Ohio State was, et cetera, et cetera. But it would be weird to put this Bama team in. Like, Bama fans in the chat, do you really believe this Bama team is anywhere near as good as your normal Bama teams are? They haven't really played like it, right? I mean, it would be strange. But I wouldn't put it past the committee if TCU gets blown out or if Duggan gets hurt. Because if Duggan gets hurt, they're going to use the whole Hooker argument, right? That, hey, like, we got to drop him now because it's an important player.
Oh, another two-loss team with a better resume than Alabama.
Tennessee.
Oh, it actually beat Alabama, but we cannot consider them for a playoff berth.
Just pure scalps, right? Just pure wins and losses. Yes, yeah. Tennessee is a better resume. Tennessee also lost by like a 30-burger to South Carolina.
To a South Carolina team that also beat top 10 Clemson.
By hey, what?
They're just, they're just peaking at the right time.
Yeah, that's fair. They also lost at home to Missouri. You know, if the committee wants to put Alabama in, they're going to lean hard on quality of play as opposed to, you know, and narrow losses. Right? They competed on the road. Buzzword. Roll Tide. Buzzword.
Game control.
Yeah.
Except for all the games they weren't.
Yeah, except for all of the games that they weren't controlling every single time they set foot outside of Bryant Denny Stadium and they weren't controlling the game.
And even one time when they were inside against the worst team in the SEC.
Alabama's one of the 10 best teams in the country. It's probably one of the 6 best teams in the country. It's not one of the 4 best teams in the country, and it sure as hell ain't one of the best Alabama teams we've ever seen. It's probably the worst Alabama team we've seen in a decade.
Yuck. What a fun position we're in.
I'm telling you, if they get in, I'm out. I won't do the reaction shows. I will talk about them on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, but I will not show up for a single reaction show.
Wait, there's no reaction show?
I mean CFP reaction show, not weekly reaction shows. When we sit on Tuesday nights to talk about those rankings, I will not show up.
We only have one more year.
No, we don't. Chip, they're going to have ranking shows for every single week during the 12-teamer. We got to figure out who the at-large person are going to be.
Oh, you're going to flake out of that one. So I was going to say, okay. Well.
I'm not flaking out. I am emphatically saying I will not do it. There's no flaking. I'm not going to come up with a lame excuse. I'm telling you right now, won't be there.
Paul gave enough money to the
Tom's going
to
join a softball league.
Paul gave enough money to St. Jude's to get a spot on a lock show. He just said he'll do it. So, you know,
Paul maybe can take my spot on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's what we'll do is next time our St. Jude's telethon comes around, we'll just do a like, who wants to come and talk about the rankings every single Tuesday night in a 12-team playoff era?
Well, I tell you. I don't know why they got them at number 11. They're clearly number 14 to me.
If you're Kirby Smart, are you pissed?
No. You're.
I think you're a little pissed. Like,
if Alabama gets in?
No, you'd much rather definitely if Alabama gets in.
Listen,
like, you really want to. You'd rather play USC.
But like, you'd rather play USC than Ohio State if you're Kirby
Smart. Oh, God.
Yes.
Okay. Because I wouldn't have, I'll just hand the ball off 40 times and I'll win the game by 30.
Yeah.
Number 7 on USC will be imprinted in the ground the way he's been trying to tackle people.
I was going to say, Jordan,
this was my playoff prediction, by the way. Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Bama. So if this happens, I do need you to pull the clip.
Mine too.
Yeah. I was going to say, Tom said that Ohio State and Michigan would both be undefeated heading into the game, and they would both make the college football playoff.
I'm a genius. What can I say?
Yeah, I was going to say, Kirby would say, listen here, we just want to keep things the main thing. All right. And so who we play does not matter compared to our standard that we want to keep. So
this game will be like the battle for Caleb Downs. The playoff winner gets Caleb Downs, the five-star safety committed to Bama. Because like Georgia and Ohio State are both trying to flip him. So probably the best DB in the country.
And that's decided before the semifinals.
Oh, true. Yeah.
If you're Sonny Dykes in that TCU coaching staff right now, are you putting together a game plan just not to get blown out?
I thought about this, like, yeah. Tempo wise, man. Like, do you run full tempo?
Slow it down. I mean, so maybe, you know, I've been watching too much World Cup this week and just seeing like Spain lay down to make sure that Germany gets knocked out and stuff like that. If I'm TCU, I think tomorrow I'm going to be pretty conservative tomorrow.
All right. I don't agree with them going conservative, but I do think there is, like, if I was coaching TCU, there is a scenario that I would play differently than what Lincoln Riley did tonight. And I'm telling you, Lincoln Riley did the thing tonight that would allow them to win the game if they converted. But I forgot what drive this was. Maybe the penultimate drive or the third to last drive. But he goes for it on like 4th and 18. They're down a couple scores, so you have to have it. I think I surrender punt there. And it, like, if I'm down 14, you know, and I know I, like, just math wise, I almost certainly can't win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going for it on 4th and 18 in my own end, allowing them to beat me by 21 to give them any excuse. Cause I don't think a 14-point loss and finishing 12-1 knocks me out.
Are you going to Chris Klieman? Are you going to Chris Klieman for a gentleman's agreement? Hey, if you are beating us, don't run it up. We won't run it up on you. You don't run it up on us. You get a nice little conference title in that case still, and we still get our playoff berth. Not saying they don't try to win. I'm just saying if that situation late fourth quarter, you're up, you got the ball, bleed that clock.
Do you think Chris Klieman takes that?
No, God, no.
No, no.
And I don't think Sonny Dykes would ever ask. I'm just trying to make conversation.
No, I think Chris Klieman would run it up.
Yeah, because I don't think Chris Klieman really wants to recruit against a TCU team with a new coach and some recruiting juice that they already have, who is now in the playoff. Like, you're in a major recruiting city. You're in Manhattan, Kansas. It's a little harder to get kids to Manhattan, Kansas than it is to Fort Worth. So just saying there, probably would want to run it up if you're Klieman.
So one last thing to bring it back to the whole reason why we fired up an instant reaction show. Are USC fans right to be upset with Alex Grinch?
Yeah. That team doesn't tackle. That team spends too much time trying to strip the ball. Tackle. The second guy in, try to strip the ball. First guy, make the tackle. It's not that difficult to coach.
I think so, but they were also really bad last year on defense, and most of their transfer portal success stuff was done on offense.
Oh, no, they need to upgrade on talent. That is, yeah, that's 100%, 1,000,000% true. But the first guy in tackles, doesn't try to strip the ball. First guy tackles, second guy go for ball.
All right, one more thing. Did Caleb Williams lose the Heisman Trophy?
No. Somebody else has to win it. Who is
Thank
that?
You. Right. I mean, if he lost it, who steps up to win it? And I think if you're a voter tonight, assuming you watched the game, haven't already sent your ballot in, because apparently you can send your ballot in already. Tom, you're a voter, right?
Yeah, you can send it in on Monday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, look, he throws for 363 and three scores.
On one leg.
Right. I don't – like, he certainly would – his play was not the reason that they lost the game. His lack of ability to throw for 505 because he got hurt which he was kind of on pace to do, was the reason why they one of the reasons why they lost the game. They also don't play any defense, which was a bigger reason. I don't know who steps up. Like, CJ Stroud does not have any more games to play. Hendon Hooker, you know, has now missed another game because he's done for the year. Max Duggan, I don't think, has been a national name enough. That's the one guy you could maybe look at and say he could do it. I don't want to hear the Stetson Bennett stuff. It's just the numbers he has are impressive. No, well, wow. I mean,
well, shock coming from you.
Yeah,
because it's interesting, because when I get my Biletnikoff information, they give me a lot of statistics. When I get my information for some of these other major awards, you know, you get a lot of statistics.
Major award.
You know, I don't get any statistics for the Heisman. I don't have to use any statistics for the Heisman.
I'm aware. Jason White.
I just have to write a name that I know. Actually, I have to write three.
Three names.
But I have to write three names that I know. So, yeah, I think there's a Stetson Bennett potential here.
If Stetson Bennett plays well tomorrow and Georgia wins, I guarantee you he's going to get some votes, particularly in the southeastern region of the country.
The fact that we're talking about Stetson Bennett as one of the guys that we're going to try to pull out of a hat here to unseat Caleb Williams gives me that much more confidence that Caleb Williams is winning this thing, guys.
Yeah. Yes. No, Caleb Williams is still going to win the Heisman, I'm pretty sure. It won't be as much of a blowout as it was a couple hours ago, but unless somebody steps up with the game of their life tomorrow.
Was that the biggest lead for USC? Was it 14-3?
17-3.
17-3.
Yeah, at 17-3, Caleb Williams was like Marcus Mariota level runner. Yeah. Like, Mariota was one of the, I think Mariota and Winston, Heisman Trophy winners in back-to-back years, were both blowout winners. Like, some of the most lopsided first place vote percentage winners in Heisman Trophy history. Like, we were kind of dealing with that until we weren't.
What's funny is, remember last year when everybody was pushing Will Anderson as like a legitimate Heisman, and then Aiden Hutchinson was a finalist, and it's like there's like the idea that they could win when there was no chance in hell either of them were ever going to win with a Bryce Young there and a CJ Stroud there, the seasons that they had. Of all the years that a defensive player could have won, if Will Anderson had last season, this season, he might legitimately win the Heisman this year because of what happened tonight.
And if Alabama had like beaten LSU.
Yeah. Well, if Will Anderson had the season last year that they probably would have beaten LSU. I bet he makes a play or two in that game that changes it. It was only a 1-point game.
Yeah, I don't know. And also, like, LSU had no good points. No, had no touchdowns at halftime of that game. I love this sport. We're relitigating snaps and bounces like all the way down on December 3rd.
I would say, I mean, I got that bottle of maple syrup back there. Vote for Chase Brown. Give him the Heisman. He sent me maple syrup.
Who do you guys seriously think is going to be in New York then? Will it be more than three guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that there's going to be so many guys getting second and third place votes that it's going to be hard to. And if they only invite three, I mean, everybody, I don't know. I don't know what they'll do, but I think the finalists.
Duggan's got a chance.
Yeah, I think Caleb's a finalist. I think Stroud's going to be a finalist still, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
Max Duggan's a finalist.
I don't know. I felt like Corum would have been a finalist, but with the knee injury, I don't know. I think Hendon Hooker could get a little influx of votes for being so strong at the beginning of the season before he got hurt because of what's happened in the last few weeks where guys are falling off. Duggan. And
Stetson,
yeah, I think Stetson's going to get like a bunch of third place votes.
Will the Hooker voters be split with the Stetson voters?
Voters will be split if Drake May beats Clemson.
Drake May might be a finalist, although I don't think after the way the North Carolina finished the season, that's a possibility.
But if Drake May beats Clemson,
true,
he could.
What if Drake May wins the Heisman?
That's not happening.
I know it's not, but I mean, again, it's whoever has the best game that last week wins.
Then 5 million becomes 7 million. yeah. I said somebody asked me about the transfer portal on local radio, and I said somebody texted me a number, not that they were representing an offer, but that they were guessing at the market value. And I honestly felt like North Carolina would just be repulsed at the idea of paying somebody that much.
I got to say, I wonder if that same person has been sending me offers for players this week.
Like, I mean, I feel like North Carolina would be like, how much? No.
I mean,
for football? No.
Can he shoot from three? Can he rebound? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, we're missing Brady Manick right now. What is he getting out from behind the arc?
What are they paying Gene Chizik?
I mean,
not enough, apparently.
Or too much, depending on your analysis of it.
All right, 700K. Would you rather pay Gene Chizik 700K for the job he's done, or pay Drake May like 4 or 5 million to keep him for year three of Drake May?
Drake May. Yeah.
I could find a high school defensive coordinator to give you similar results to what you had this year. If you want to finish
defensive coordinator right now.
Yeah.
I just feel like it would offend some sensibilities in Chapel Hill to think that they were going to pay.
That's exactly what my thought was. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. We pay a college athlete to participate in extracurricular activities. 5 million.
Are those online course credits not enough?
Unless that extracurricular activity happens to be basketball, and then
then Jimmy Seafood's got it. We back up the Brinks truck, baby.
By the way, North Texas ticket.
No,
I hedged out, but you know, it was a good run. But Frank Harris is nasty.
He's legit.
So what is Utah now? 17-1 in CUSA the last 2 years now.
As they're on their way out, right?
Yeah, 17-1 over the last two years.
They didn't lose this year in CUSA.
No.
Right, and they lost. And the only game they lost last year,
North Texas.
It was the game they laid down for. They kept their starters out.
Wagon.
Yeah.
Hmm. Sounds like a good omen for the Bobcats. Omen for the Bobcats. Let's go, Wagons.
Yeah, no. The way Locks have started off this week, I don't know. I'm kind of scared.
Did you see how Akron Buffalo ended?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw how Buffalo was just sitting on its tail for the first two quarters.
I was honestly,
oh, you didn't see the final like the final sequence?
The final touchdown?
No, the final sequence. All right, so Akron picks off Buffalo, runs it back to the Buffalo, 33-ish. The very next play, the running back quarterback fumbled the exchange. Mm-hmm. Give it back to Buffalo. Buffalo drives down, fourth down, the back end touchdown. It was...
Mixion.
Mm. Yeah.
I was mostly
watching Serbia Switzerland at the time, to be honest.
The beginning of that game, I thought Buffalo was like Akron. I was wondering, did they clear it with the players that they wanted to play this game to get to a bowl? Because the play that came out, they did not look at all interested to be in that game.
Yeah. Mm.
Bananas. All right. So we will be back with you Saturday night with all the reaction to everything that's in the books. Ohio State, congratulations. You're back in the game. Gross ass. 2-loss Alabama. You might be too. We'll see how things go on Saturday.
now that I've said I'm not going to do the reaction show on Tuesdays if Alabama gets in the playoff, do I want Alabama to get in the playoff?
And also, we'll be here on Sunday after the playoff gets announced. So, one way or the other, we'll be here. But most of all, I do want to end this on a high note. So, congratulations to Kyle Whittingham, a man who I watched on film continue a recruiting call in the midst of a fire alarm. There was an actual fire alarm going on in a university building. Kyle Whittingham said, nah, fire ain't got shit on me. And he sat there with his tray and he continued recruiting. And those are the kind of stones that win you a Pac-12 championship. Two in a row, for the record. Salute to you, Kyle Whittingham.
Mm-hmm.
Your Utah program is the class of the Pac-12 once again. As you take down USC for the second time in a season, phenomenal, phenomenal performance, especially in the second half, even if it did come in the midst of a Caleb Williams injury. Woo! So much to get to, so much more to unpack here in this conference championship weekend. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fernelli. You can follow him on at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See y'all.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.